Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Our History. My name is Tony DiBolfo, and I'm speaking to you from the confines of the Brewstool Media Room here at Visy Park. And now to today's guest. His career was confined to 71 senior appearances over 8 seasons and a grand final appearance amongst them. But I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, has there ever been a greater Carlton cult hero than today's guest? He lived with his Italian-born parents in the shadows of the legend stand at the Garton Street end of the old Princess Park ground. And through the 1970s and 80s, he dazzled the dark navy blue faithful with his pace, his pirouettes and his canny evasive skills. Similarly, he was subjected to all the twists and turns this often cruel game presents. Fate would take him across the Nullarbor to Subiaco, back to Carlton for a second stint, and then on to Melbourne and finally Sydney, where his league career would end more than 10 years after it had begun. But home was always where the heart is for the man in the number 4 Guernsey, whose trademark afro hairstyle is a little shorter and a little greyer these days, but remains firmly affixed to the head of one of Carlton's most endearing and enduring characters. Of course, I'm speaking of Vinny the Cat, Vin Cotoggio, and the great man joins us now. Vincenzo, welcome back to Carlton.
It's great to be here, Beast.
Now, Vinny, we've got a lot of territory to cover, and we have to go right back, even to the days beyond Carlton, to your days as a junior player at Princes Hill. And before this telecast started, this broadcast, I should say, you were speaking of one of the great influences on your career as a footballer, a Mr. Carroll. Can you tell the story about the late Mr. Carroll and his influence on you at Princes Hill?
Tony, I was a pretty ordinary footballer when I started under 13s and went right through about under 16s and never got much of a touch and, you know, just throw you on a half-back flank and, you know, you get one or two touches a week and that was it. And you felt like you didn't contribute. But he one night showed us all how to balk and blind turn around the goalposts and then later took us up along Royal Parade and we balked the trees. And for some reason, I just took it. It came very natural. It was just like a bit of a challenge to me. I just sort of got around it pretty easily and I felt very comfortable in doing that. And weeks later, I still wasn't getting a kick. But weeks later, he just said to me one day before a game, he said, look, he said, you're very quick. He said, so just get the ball and run and bounce it. So I started doing that. And all of a sudden, you know, I just found myself out and, you know, by myself running. And all of a sudden, when players were coming towards me, I was able to sidestep, get around. And there was one game that, I don't mean to sound like a hog, I suppose, but I actually got the ball on the back line and bounced it about 10 times to the goal square and kicked the goal, you know, because then people were coming at me and I was just getting around them. So all of a sudden, I think about 16, I just started to get a bit of confidence. And then all of a sudden, you know, every time I got the ball, I knew I could get around people. So, yeah, it changed my whole footy career.
And it's fascinating to hear the story, Vin, when you consider that perhaps in today's game where, you know, there's so much of an emphasis on the team thing and it's all regimented, that maybe there isn't the sort of scope that you enjoyed at that time to actually take the game on.
Yeah, I think there's still a place for it if you're able to, you know, quickly get the ball and get around the person in front of you and then deliver. But you probably couldn't hang on to it too long because you're I suppose the guy's upfield to be out of position, you know, if you hung on too long and you'd probably get a spray, you know.
And you said that Mr. Carroll's no longer with us. He was a taxi driver, I think, by profession. Was he around long enough to see your career as a league footballer pan out?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he was around. He only passed away probably, you know, 10 years ago. Yeah, so during that time when I was playing, I always credited him for his, you know, wonderful help.
Now, Vinny, you came to the club, as I say, from pretty much over the back fence. The family home was, as I said, earlier in Garton Street, just over the back of the legend stand. Can you actually paint the picture of what life was like for you living in that house in the shadows of the old grandstand and your involvement with the club as a little kid?
Yes. Mum and Dad still live across the road. Mum's 87, Dad's 86. It was fun growing up around here. The ground was completely different. I think the Gardener Stand and the Heatley were the only two at the time, and then they built the social club. But our playground was the Carlton football ground. We used to, as many times as possible, sneak in under the fences, away over the fences, and, you know, get out on the ground and think we were Alex Cesarlenko. And, yeah, we played on the hills. There used to be some old pieces of tin, and you'd slide down the hills. And so until we got kicked off the ground or, you know, out of the ground. But, yeah, it was part of our growing up, and it was fantastic on match days because we would wait till three-quarter time till the gates open and then come in and watch the last quarter as young kids. And it was great atmosphere because there was a lot of people around. My mother and father really enjoyed it. And actually, since football stopped here at Princes Park, as it was known then, my mother's missed it because she missed the atmosphere and the people that were around on a Saturday afternoon. So it's got a lot quieter.
I'm sure it has. And Vin, those early years, you mentioned sneaking to through the gate, you know, the last quarter of those games. Are there moments that you remember of specific games that you saw? You know, did you have a favourite Carlton player? Who was the number that you had on your back as a kid?
When I first started, my mother knit my first football jumper. I don't think we could afford to buy one. She asked me what number I wanted, and I wanted number 10, Adrian Gallagher. And I wore that for a few years, and then I'm not sure if Adrian left or... But it was easier to take the zero off and add the one. It was John Gould, so I had number 11 on my back for a few years. And then later on, I think everyone in Melbourne had number 25 on their back. So for a while there, we all used to run around pretending we were Alex Cesarlenko.
What a player he was. And Vinny, did you believe in those early years that, you know, one day this might be me out there?
No. No, never once as a kid growing up did I ever envisaged playing for Carlton.
I asked Alex Marcou recently about his upbringing, and he talked about, you know, his heritage, his Greek Macedonian heritage. Can you talk a little bit about your father and mother's upbringing, where they came from when they came to Carlton, and a little bit about their story?
Yeah. Well, Mum and Dad both came from the same village, Montemurro, just out of Potenza, and they're actually second cousins, so they had the same name, but both Cotogios. But they didn't know each other, you know, being kids over there. So their fathers both came over here to set up, you know, their life basically. But the depression came on, so they had to sit around for 4 or 5 years, and during that time. My father wasn't born when my grandfather left, see? So, and after he was born a couple of years later, his mother died. So they had no mother, basically. And I think they just got a lady from the village to look after the two kids. And by the time my grandfather had made enough money to get his family over, he'd never seen my father. So my father was 10 by the time he came here, and it was the first time they'd ever met. And during that, and by the way, my grandfather married this woman by proxy, so he hadn't even seen her. So 10 years later, after they initially left Italy, they probably, you can imagine being at Port Melbourne, I suppose, they get off the boat, and he's seen his wife and son. He had another son, which was about 2 years old, I suppose, at the time. Seen his son and wife for the first time.
An incredible story. And how long have they been in the house at Carlton?
They've been there about nearly 60 years.
Okay, so they would have seen a lot of change to the area, I dare say. And, of course, Carlton was a very strong Italian enclave. Peter Bevilacqua, yeah. I understand, he's related to you, former Carlton player, and the only Italian-born league footballer.
Yes, yeah. His brother, Tony, was my uncle.
Right. Mm. Okay. So it was a very strong territorial link that the family had with this area and still has.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Now, Vin, We've talked to you about your childhood experiences and your favourite player at Carlton. Can you talk a little bit now about the circumstances of your signing to the club as a junior? You were encouraged to come to Carlton to play in the
under-19s. Yeah.
What were the circumstances there? Who made the overtures from the club to you?
We used to just play in the park nearby, and just before the home games here at Carlton, some of the, I suppose, scouts back in those days used to come over and jot down a few numbers. And maybe I was running down the wing, had a few bounces, and sort of saw me there. And I remember I used to wear number 18, actually, for Princess Hill. And, I was lucky enough to get a letter Christmas time asking me to come to training for the under-19s. And lucky enough to get through and make the squad and play year of under-19s.
And I think George Armstrong was the man you named as having been involved in getting you across?
That's right, yeah. And George was a great Carlton man.
Who was your first coach here at Carlton?
In the under-19s, Bill Hoogan, and in the reserves, Keith McKenzie.
Capers still going strong, yeah. Of course. Now, you obviously took all before you in those first two seasons, 72 and 73. You've won the Morris in 72 and the Garner in 73. You know, you obviously found your feet pretty early. There didn't seem to be any problem in acclimatising at that level, at least.
Yeah. Look, I think it was mainly... it's hard to say because I don't think I really played all that well. I just think that, I might have got a few votes because I was a bit flashy, you know. I had some good games, but I don't know, you know. Look, I mean, I suppose you sometimes when you win these awards, you can be a bit harsh on yourself, but, you know, I don't think I was probably, you know, I didn't win the best and fairest in those sides in any of those years, but I was able to attract votes from the umpires, you know.
Did that have anything to do with the afro? Was the afro out and about at that stage?
Yeah, it was just starting to prop up.
And, of course, you cut your teeth presumably as a rover?
Yeah, mainly as a rover.
And then you break through, I think, in 73. You might have made your debut against Collingwood, I recall, 7th or 8th round of that year.
Spot on.
Do you remember the circumstances and the experience?
Yeah, well, I'd played the year before. I'd played the last 7 games in the reserves, and then the following year made the list in 73, then played about 8 or 9 reserve games and then got a game on the bench. But back in those days, 19th and 20th, and I remember going on with about 3 minutes to go in the last quarter. So never got a touch, you know. And I remember the bloke I played on, actually, Conbritt. That's it, yes, Conbritt.
Fairly vigorous, intimidating sort of figure.
Yeah, I played on him. I just whoever came off, I went on to, and he sort of picked me up, and I just remember because he was a bit of a name player. And then the siren went. I don't think I needed to shower, you know.
Was that game here or at Victoria
Park? No, it was here. Yeah.
And I take it Mum and Dad were here?
Yeah, they would have been here for sure.
Fantastic experience, albeit brief. Yeah. But you did play the following week, I think you...
Yes, I actually played the following week at South Melbourne, and I played the whole last quarter. Brent Croswell came off for something, and I went on a second rover to Brian Walsh. And in actual fact, that game was my game I kicked my first league goal. And it was Wolsey that actually passed it to me. And I was, you know, he took it, taking a mark about, 50 metres out. And I could see him looking at me and just signalling to me to sort of lead. So he made out he was having a shot. And as he was about to kick it, I led. And he just gave me a... 10-metre pass, and I went back and was at South Melbourne, and I remember the grandstand, and I thought, geez, this is my chance.
Nice memory.
And I remember kicking my first goal, you know, it was fantastic.
What is it like coming into a place where you've got, you know, men of the stature of John Nicholls, Alex Jesolenko, Robert Walls, Bruce Doole? I mean, were you intimidated by their presence? Did they take you under the wing? What was it like, the interaction, the dynamics?
Look, I think to be honest, I can't. All I can remember was that I don't belong here. You know, I was a skinny little kid, and I'm looking at blokes like Jezza, the way they were built, and you know, Croswell, and you know, Vinnie Waite, and you know, Dooley, Southby, all those guys, and I'm thinking, geez, you know, I just feel embarrassed. I don't think I wore short sleeves for many years because I was very skinny, so I'd always wear long sleeves, and I think, you know, I just felt a little bit, intimidated because I didn't think I was anywhere as good as to be in that situation.
You know? And did you find that you had to earn your stripes in time? Did you find that the interaction improve with those players because they basically accepted you as a senior player?
Yeah, I think what happens is that my first stint here, because as you know, I went over to Perth, I only played, you know, a handful of games. So you're sort of right in and out, and you sort of don't feel like you're part of the team. And probably the senior players think the same. They probably think, oh, you know, who's in this week, who's out? It's not until you become more or less established where you get the respect, I think, you know. They can look at you and think, well, he's going to contribute enough for us today, you know.
And John Nicholls, of course, was captain coach of the club at that time.
That's right.
You know, we don't see captain coaches anymore. You know, what was the influence of Nicholls on you?
Look, he was, I suppose, back then, he probably didn't say a lot to me, to be honest. I don't know if John was more of a teacher. I think he was more of a, you know, like he played and you had that much respect for him. So I don't really think, you know, I learnt a lot, but I respected him. And, you know, he just sort of taught us that, you know, you had to earn your stripes to be in the side. And I remember actually he was not playing this season. He was just coaching. And I remember the first time I got best on ground, it was against St Kilda at Moorabbin, and we went back to a hotel. And I remember he came up to me at the bar and he said to me, you know, great game. And he says, you know, that game's going to give you three more for certain games, you know. So he said, the next 3 weeks, just relax. Yeah, and I just thought that was wonderful to know, wow, you know, you're going to at least play the next 3 weeks. And as it was, the following week, I actually went out and played a very good game and got another vote because I was relaxed thinking, and I was thinking, okay, I've got another vote here, I might get another 3 game.
I wonder if that still happens.
I don't know. But that's, you know, that was something that, and now I had wasn't a bad year for me. I probably played, you know, 10 or 12 games, you know, which was, yeah, and it was a very hard side to get into. That was the thing, so.
And yet, of course, in 73, circumstances were such that you were suddenly called upon, you know, with the team making the charge to the last Saturday in September. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you played the 2 games for the home and away season in 73, and you were called up then at finals time? There was a lull between?
Yeah. I hadn't played. Well, what actually happened was we played in the finals that year, and we played in the first final, and I got a really bad corky. So I was only coming to the club to get me corky fixed up and watching the boys train. And might have been Keith McKenzie. He said, look, he said, it'd be a good experience for you to, you know, go out and train with the boys. So I waited a week or so till my corky, you know, became okay. And just trained, and that was it, basically. And I was just wrapped just to be running around, you know, with the guys that were going to be playing in the next few weeks. And then we had a dramatic week when I think Barry Armstrong might have pulled a hammy or something like that.
And Trevor Keogh was taken ill? Or
yeah, or
vice versa.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, you know, people were saying, well, you know, they're going to have to put somebody in. And I think it was between Ashy and myself at the time. So, you know, it went my way. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, it wasn't a good game for me. And, you know, I think we got beaten by 3 or 4 goals.
In retrospect, I mean, Did you feel that you were ready for that experience?
No.
No. I just want to cut in here, Vin, and you mentioned Brent Croswell earlier, one of the great Carlton players and an even greater football writer, I think. And I just want to read you this little piece that he wrote, and I wanted to get your thoughts. This is about that experience. When Vinny came into the rooms after that game, he was pale and upset. He made straight for the showers because his statistics read 3 kicks and 5 handballs. It was sad to see his solitary form sitting in the bath, his arms resting on his knees, his head down, his eyes full of tears. That grand final failure was the worst experience of Vinny's life. It coloured the rest of his sporting career. In fact, he didn't play a senior game in 74. He was, in his own words, never in contention. Throughout his football career, he sought absolution and an opportunity to atone for this failure, but he didn't get another chance because 73 was his last grand final. Reflecting on those comments, was Brent pretty close to the mark?
Yeah, probably 100%.
Yeah? It was a tough initiation for you. I mean, you hadn't played in the grand final before. Suddenly you're thrust into it. And yeah. I mean, it's an enormous...
Yeah, well, the thing is, as I said, I wasn't even training 2 weeks before that. I was, you know, sitting in the rooms getting treatment on a corky. And I thought my season, mentally, you know, like if your season finishes, you know, you mentally switch off. And then for someone to sort of say, I'll start training again. And I just thought when I started training again, it was just going to be to have an experience of training with but not realising that all of a sudden, Thursday night, I think it was a Thursday night that someone said to me, might have been Keith McKenzie, actually came up to me and said, listen, train well, because you might be a chance to get in. I thought, you're kidding. So, yeah, that's what happened. So I wasn't ready at all, you know what I mean? I just, you know, it was just one of those things. And back in those days, you didn't have, like, mentors, you know. I remember Vinnie Waite picking me up at my place, with his wife and taking me to the game. But, you know, it was... and I'd never played it. Like, I'd never started a game. The two games I'd played were one for 3 minutes and the other one for a quarter. So I didn't even know what the feeling was to start a game and to play into a grand final. I couldn't even hear the whistle blow, you know. It was just that loud. And Kevin Bartlett was a very good player and I played on him. Even though I could keep up with him, you know, he was a superstar probably at that stage, you know.
Now, is it true that you didn't play a game in 74?
Yeah, that's right.
And was that sort of residual effect from that game? Did you go into your shell? What actually happened?
No. I just think it was. I think I had a bit of a black mark against my name, and deservedly so. I suppose they probably said, look, you know, maybe he couldn't handle the pressure or whatever. But I played some good footy that year in the reserves. I think I might have even run second in the Morris Medal. Gardner Medal that year. So I had a pretty good year, but never got a look in.
You may well have been the scapegoat for a disappointing team performance that day, Vin.
Yeah, look, I'm not too sure, but, you know, I suppose back then, you know, just copped it on the chin and, you know, just wanted to play footy, but, you know, didn't get a chance at next year.
And do you still have a regret about it, or is life too short? You actually move on, you put it out the system.
No. Look, it's a great, a lot of people ask me about it. Yeah, and I've actually at times said to people, I sometimes get sick of talking about it. But look, it's a talking point. It did happen, and you just move on.
For sure. And you did move on because in 75, you strung some pretty good games together for the club. Yeah. And I think this is where people's memories of you, you know, dancing around opposition players like the old witch's hats really starts to kick in. You know, the memories that supporters have of you are, for the most part, happy ones. And yet in 76, you were curiously leased to Subiaco for 2 seasons. Do you know how that came about?
Yeah, I do actually. I was playing 76, I was playing some good footy, and Mike Fitzpatrick said to me, he said, you know the problem with you? He said, you're too good for reserves, but not good enough for seniors. And he says, you need to play at a higher level. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you need to play, you know, South Australia, Western Australia, and play in their league to get a little bit better. He said, because you're not going to get better playing reserves. And he was 100% right. And he said, if you like, he says, you know, I can get you over to Subi. He said, that's where I played, you know. And I said to him, I had to think about it for a week, and I just said to him, mate, yeah, let's do it. I want to go. So halfway through the year, I think clearances closed or whatever. I think I was leased, that's right. And I went over there and played nine games. And I remember when I got there, Hassan Mann was the chairman of selectors. And he said, he gave me some great advice where he said, a lot of VFL players come here and think it's going to be easier. And he says, and they all get caught out. He says, none of them do too well. He says, so if you come here with the right attitude and train the same as you at Carlton, he says, you'll set an example and you'll play well. And I remember training, it was a bit easier than Carlton. And I remember that I trained, you know, as high a standard as I could. And then that came out in the games. And I got in that nine games I played that year, I got 10 votes in the Sandover medal. It was the highest in our side. And I ran third in their best and fairest in nine games over there. So I started to play some good footy. And then the next season, I came back home, and I just thought I needed another season. So I went back the following season and had a pretty good season.
Brian Douge was your coach at the old Hawthorne player?
Yeah, he was fantastic. He was a great coach, taught me a lot. And at the end of the season, Brian said, I think it's time for you to go back because I think, you know, you're going to go well.
And I dare say the big dry open tracks of WA really suited you.
Yeah. It was always pretty dry, even if it rained. And, you know, there's plenty of bounce in the ball over there and, you know, trying to get around blokes. And I felt very comfortable. And there's some great players over there. Like, you know, Jimmy Cracker was just starting to play and Kenny Hunter was playing, Bazusto was playing, Glenn Dinning. And, you know, there were some great names. And then in the next few years, they all came over here, you know. So it was a great competition.
And when you came back to Carlton, of course, Carlton itself was changing. And I guess we saw the beginnings of the mosquito fleet. You know, all those great small men started out on their careers, which probably didn't help your cause a lot. And then Jezza, of course, took over as captain coach.
That's right.
A very interesting year, 78. How was it for you?
Yeah, it started off, Ian Stewart was coaching us and played a couple of games with Ian coaching. And then when he finished up, for some reason, I wasn't getting a game. And I remember playing in the reserves, and I reckon I got five best on grounds in a row. And I thought, you know, what else can I do? So you feel a bit frustrated. And I was actually ready to probably quit, I suppose. I, you know, played a reserves game at Essendon. You know, I remember, you know, kicking five goals and thinking, oh, well, I'm not going to get a game next week. And I actually had a word to Jezza during the week, and I said to him, well, you know, I think you've been a little bit unfair. You're playing blokes that aren't performing, and, you know, if you look at what I've done the last 5 weeks. Anyway, he just sort of said, yeah, we'll have a look at it. And I actually played the following week at Waverley against Melbourne. And I remember it's my first time I ever kicked two goals in a game, you know. And then I played the following week and kicked three. And I played the following week against Hawthorne here and I kicked four. So all of a sudden I was just starting to get a bit of confidence and played the rest of the season. Anyway, that season I ended up finishing fourth in the best and fairest. And I remember Jezza saying to me that, you know, he said, you know, if you would have played another couple of games, you would have won it, you know. So I had a pretty good year. And I think, I made the state squad that year, but didn't make I got injured in one of the finals because they used to play the state game at the end of the year. So, so my opportunity of playing state footy went out the window when I got injured.
Yeah, Jezza obviously was a great influence, as you said, but just backtracking slightly, for, you know, Ian Stewart, he was here only for a brief period of time, but do you remember that experience?
Oh, look, he was fantastic. He was fantastic because he was one of the reasons I think I started to get a game because I was training one night over on the number one oval there, and he came up to me after training and he said, I've been watching you for a while. And he says, I like the way you play. And I thought, geez, I've got a bit of support here from the senior coach. And he says, I'm going to give you a go. He says, because I love the way you play. And that, for a young kid, you think, wow, you know. So I reckon the next night of training, I reckon I was on, you know, cloud nine, probably training better and better. And I remember playing in a practice game, and I've still got the article at home somewhere. We used to play Hawthorne, the last practice game every year, and before the first game. And I played in that practice game and got 40 possessions, you know. It was something like 28 kicks and 12 handballs, and it was best on ground, you know. And then from then on, I just thought, you know, I think I can play okay here, you know. So, yeah, so sort of – but then I played two or three games, got dropped, played those five good ones, then came back. And then played, for two or three years, probably had some good footy here, you know.
And Ian Stewart, of course, Coach Carlton, having played at St Kilda and Richmond.
Yeah.
And Mick Malthouse, coaches Carlton, having played at St Kilda and Richmond.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts of the new coach at Carlton in 2013?
Yeah, look, I think it's. I think everyone's wondering, you know, how we're going to go. But he's had success. I think everyone's looking forward to it. So I think he'll do well. I think we've got a nucleus of a good side.
1979 was a premiership year, Vin, under Alex Jesolenko. What happened that year that didn't see you make the cut for that grand final team?
I had a pretty good year in 79. I probably played, 18, 19 games, I suppose. Got a few injuries towards the end of the season. And there just wasn't enough time to come back from those injuries to play, you know, at the standard that I was playing. And I remember Jezza being really keen to get me into the side, and we were meeting here at lunchtimes during the week and going for a run and dragging tyres and having a kick just to try and get that extra fitness. But back then, there was the five, and there was only two. We only played two finals. We won the first one, and we had a rest, and the side played really well. So there was no way getting back into that side, and it wasn't fair to drop anyone, you know. So that was it.
That's life, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'm wrapped for the guys that played, and you know, it's just one of those things. I never begrudge anyone.
And, of course, 1980, I think, was your final year at Carlton. Was it difficult to leave the place? I mean, Carlton obviously had been such a big part of your life, still is.
Yeah, for sure.
Was it hard to leave?
Yeah, it was, actually. It came down to, I think, the bottom line was that when they put you up for a bit of a trade, you sort of think, oh, well, they don't really want you. So you sort of think, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't hang around. Probably a bad call, but who's to know at the time. But, probably wish I would have stayed, because I would have been able to play some good footy. I think I lost my desire when I went to Melbourne. It was like going from, Sorrento to Frankston type thing. So, it was completely different. And it was hard to get motivated, you know.
You went there, I think, with Michael Young as part of the Greg Wells deal.
Yes.
You catch up with Wellsy? I hope he's thanked you for your
part. No, not really, but I've seen him around. Yeah, good luck to him, you know what I mean? I don't hold any grudges.
And then, of course, you left Melbourne, I think, at the end of 82, and then you transferred to Sydney in 83. You played that one season in Sydney. Which, again, I guess was quite a unique experience, really.
It was. It was fantastic. I'd actually retired, Tony. I virtually was going to play for Preston. I was actually trained at Preston under Tony Shaw. Ray Shaw. Yeah. And I got a phone call at Easter, because they'd already played three games. So, it was Tony Ball, I think it was, Luke Ball's father. Rang me, or Franklin. There was a Franklin that was with them. Anyway,
Tony Franklin,
that's it. And they said, and apparently I think someone had a knee injury and they were going to be out for the year, so they were short on small bikes, and rang me and said, we'd like to talk to you. And Anyway, I had a meeting with them, and they basically wanted me to play first that week. And I said, I haven't been training. So I'm looking around to play for, VFA side. And I played a game against North Melbourne in the reserves, and I did all right, 4 or 5 goals, and I was in the following week. So I played the year out there. But the following year, they wanted me to live up there, and I wasn't keen on that, so retired.
And your connection with the club here has really remained unbroken. I mean, you're a Carlton person, and you're still passionate about the fortunes of the club, where it's heading, how it's going.
Yeah, for sure.
It still runs deep with you?
Oh, very much so. I don't mean this to be disrespectful for Swans and Melbourne, but I don't even think of that I played for them, you know what I mean? It's always back of my mind that, people associate me with Carlton and I associate myself with Carlton. I remember Ian Robinson, he was captain of reserves, and he said that you're probably better off playing 70 games with Carlton than 150 with, Footscray or something like that back in those days, He said, because you're playing with a great side. And, and I'm not saying this disrespectfully to other clubs, but, if you, some of the lower clubs, if you were to say, mention some great names, I suppose some of those clubs you mention 5 or 6 and then you stop and think, At Carlton, you could probably name 40 and then be disrespectful to another 30 because there's so many great players who have played. You've been doing an injustice to try and pick your best 30 or 40 players because we've just had so many. I remember turning up to some games and you'd look around the room and you'd see Jezelenko and Duell and, Southby, Harmsey and, McClure and, all those sort of blokes. And you think, geez, you squirrel sort of scratch. Think to yourself, should I be here? Would I do justice to these guys, But that's what it was like. So you had so much confidence to run out on the ground with those guys and you knew they were always there to help you. So
we're getting towards the end, Vinny. There's a couple of little sides I want to put to you. Greg Williams has obviously put the matter of concussion front and centre on the landscape football now. You were a slightly framed player, a small player. Were you, victim of concussion often? Do you think back now and reflect on what Greg said and understand where he's coming from?
Yeah, exactly. I copped some big whacks. I was concussed a few times and, hit around the head. Yeah. Maybe that's my excuse now. I forget things.
You haven't forgotten too much today. And the afro. I mean, it was such a part of your persona.
Yeah.
Were you conscious of, the impact you were making on people that were coming to see you play that, really loved to watch you, running around blokes like our witches' hats?
Yeah, no, it wasn't actually because it was just my natural hairstyle. I never sort of made a point to, grow it longer or, make it more curly, but there's just who I was. But I suppose what it's done over the years is, I get a lot of people, if I speak to people on the phone and they say, what's your name? And I say, Vinca Todger, they always ask me, you still got the afro, And I say, no, it's gone now. But, and I think it's just I remember people used to say, over the years, we never knew who you were, but we always knew you as your hair, with your hair. We didn't know your name, but they wanted to say, oh, that guy with the curly hair that plays for Carlton, So a lot of people probably didn't know my name, but knew of me because of the fuzzy hair.
And it must be fabulous for you that people, come up and talk to you about the memories that you gave them. I mean, that you did have such an impact on people that actually saw you play. You make people feel happy, which has got to be a good thing.
Yeah, look, Tony, probably over the last, 15, 20 years, I always thought I was very lucky to be in a position to play footy. I was no superstar, but, able to play some, some good footy at times. And I just reckon it's time that you sort of give back to people that watched you play. And I have so many people come up and say that to me and say, you know, like, I used to wear your number, or you were my favourite player, or I used to love watching you play. So in respect to them, I give them a, you know, always say hello and ask them their name and, you know, thank them very much for their support, because, you know, without the people going to the football, I mean, football wouldn't be what it is. So I think you've got to give back a little bit. And I love when people say hello, you know, I mean, I love talking football, and I love, and I don't want to make people welcome to me. You see some people say, oh, hi, and just sort of think they're, you know, invading your space. But to me, I'll go over and say, oh, what's your name, you know? Now, and I'd like to share a few stories with them on my experiences, you know, because a lot of them like to hear that sort of stuff. You know, I was in Marimbula the other day, and, you know, someone, you know, said, Vinny, how are you going? You know, I just went over and said hello to the bloke, you know, and had a 10-minute chat to him. You know, and I get, and I'm just absolutely over the moon at times, because I've been out of football for a long time. But, you know, anything up to two or three times a week, someone says hello, you know, either in the car, someone bips, or, you know, talks football, you know. At my jobs.
And that's 30 years after you last played, so yeah, that says a lot. Yeah. Vinny, we are winding up. I have two more questions to ask you, two final questions. The number four, it's worn by Bryce Gibbs. Do you follow Bryce's career? Have you met him?
I have, actually. I've met Bryce, and we've had a photo taken together, and I do follow him, yeah, very much so, because you see the number four running around, and all of a sudden you think, oh, geez, it's my number there for a while. But some great players have worn it. Sticks wore it, Vizasto, you know.
It's
been a great number.
And a final one, which we put to all of our guests that come to the Bruce Steel Media Room. What does Carlton actually mean to you?
Oh, look, first of all, they gave me the opportunity to play, you know, VFL, AFL football. Without that opportunity, you wouldn't be talking to me, I suppose. But they've always been a great... and to be part of that, you know, in a small way, just to have represented in the jumper, you know, it's yeah, I suppose you always have it with you, and I suppose people associate you with the club, and they're such a proud club, such a great club. Yeah, you know, till the day you die, you always be associated somewhere along the line, and yeah, just proud to have hopefully done a little bit, you know, to enhance the Carlton name, you know.
You've certainly done that. Vin Cotoggio, thanks very much for you sharing your memories today. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you. I'm sure the listeners that remembered you play will warm to what you've said. So let's hope we see you around the place forever and a day. And to all listening, we'll see you soon for the next podcast at carltonfc.com.au.